Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's your alarm clock of free speech. Why? Because early in the morning it just jars you and your eyes get all wide and you say, what the hell? And then you smash the alarm clock and then you remember, oh yeah, I have to get up. And that's what we're like. We're jarring you awake. And you've got to get up. There's the time for snoozing is done. All right, so let's get up and let's get busy. So go to get busy first by going to republicbroadcasting.org and smashing that donate button with extreme prejudice. Okay, and then you download the CoSertified app, because when you're going to have your bacon and eggs, you want to know whether your bacon is kosher certified or not. Odds are it's not. But download that CoSertified app from nationalbugle.com. Okay, today is Tuesday. We have Mark Collett jumping over from across the pond. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. I want to say to everyone, I hope you all had a wonderful Easter break. I hope you had a great long weekend. Do you know what? Last weekend was a strange weekend for me, because I have been streaming almost constantly for years, really. And last weekend was actually the first weekend I didn't have a stream on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or a Monday. So I had four consecutive days where I didn't actually have any work in terms of being on streams, talking about politics. I had a little bit of a break, and it was quite nice, actually. I spent it with the family. But I am back now, obviously back ready and raring to go. And I hope everyone had a restful weekend and managed to get some family time in. Because I've got to say this, I do love what we do. I do love the work we do. I am very committed to this cause, obviously. But I've got to say this, I think sometimes you do need a little bit of downtime. You do need a little bit of time away from it all, because it can get a little wearing. And yeah, Easter is a great time, because especially when you've got a small child, as I have, and I will say this, I did enjoy it. Although I wouldn't say it was the the most stress-free Easter I could have had. Obviously, little ones bring their own challenges with them, but it was
Easter eggs.
Did we have lots of Easter eggs? Boy, did we have lots of Easter eggs. You wouldn't believe it, Patrick, but the amount of Easter egg hunts that we went on was unbelievable. In my area, there are so many different things you can do, and we decided that it would probably be best to do nearly all of them over one weekend. So it was quite good, and the little one, little Sophia, had plenty of eggs, and we obviously
Did you dye eggs at your home?
Dye eggs?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, you take the hard-boiled eggs and you put them in dye and decorate them.
No. What we did here, she bought some chocolate eggs and we hid them in a variety of places and made like a little obstacle course that she had to go around and discover all of the eggs. And she had a little bag that she went that looks like a little Easter chick. And as she went around, she filled the bag with little chocolate eggs, which she then ate and got slightly hyperactive because of.
Okay. Well, it sounds like fun. It sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, those are good times. All right. Well, last time you were here, we didn't talk about the Ukraine much. And there's a couple things that I think need to be spoken about the Ukraine. And late last week, there was a Russian ship called the Moskva or something like that, named after the Russian capital of Moscow. It apparently is 40 years old and was going to be decommissioned soon anyway, but was nevertheless the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, and it has sunk. And the Russians were saying, well, it was a fire, but it seems as if it was sunk by hostile military action. And that is a kind of a humiliation, not necessarily that much of a setback, but it is a humiliation. And, you know, what it says to me is while I don't think that the Ukraine, in fact, I know the Ukrainians aren't going to prevail in this military struggle, it does show that there is a certain amount of ability to inflict damage on the Russian side. And just when you take those 2 points together and add in one more point, that the Russians see Ukraine as being used as a staging ground for a effort by the Jewish-dominated West to topple the Putin government and install, well, go back to a Jewish oligarchy. That's the way they see it. That's the way I see it. They see it as an existential threat to them as a government, but also personally, because when you look at what happened to some other leaders that have been toppled in regime change wars, like Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, this is an existential threat to these people as human beings. So they have the means to prevail in this militarily. They have not been trying to smash the Ukrainians, but they'll do what they need to do to meet their military objectives. So when you take it all into account, when you take it, add it all up, the more weapons that are sent by the United States, by Poland, by other countries into this, all it can possibly do is extend a war that the Ukrainians are going to lose. And by extending it, meaning there's going to be more death and destruction. Of course, the more death and destruction there is, then the more brownie points, the more propaganda points there are for the United States to go around and try to rally economic sanctions and whatnot. But the thing is, there's no way of stopping Russia from meeting its military objectives short of nuclear World War III. And the Russians, because this is an existential threat to them, if they are pushed that far, if they are pushed to a nuclear World War III, they will embark on a nuclear World War III. And that's the only way to prevent them from meeting their objectives is nuclear Holocaust. And who really wants to do that? And why is this happening? So that's my preamble. And yet you still have everybody with their Facebook pages blue and yellow, and Boris Johnson and that old man, Joseph R. Brandon R. Trojan. They're all pushing for Ukraine to continue to fight and to send weapons. So what do you make of all this, Mark?
Well, there's two things that we're going to take away from this, or that I'll take away from this. I think you've got one thing slightly wrong.
Okay.
And I think it is initially right, but I think the parameters have changed. But I'll talk about, firstly, the sinking of the Moskova. Now, when this happened, I was really, really, how can I say it? I was not completely sure that it had actually happened, because we've heard so many lies from the West during this conflict already that you can't really tell what's truth and what isn't. And I'll give you a couple of very quick examples. The first has been that the West have been telling us on a daily basis as well. That's not an exaggeration. It's on a daily basis that basically generals are being killed every 5 minutes. You've got a situation where other high-ranking officers are either quitting or turning tail, that Russians are, you know, leaving the battlefield in their droves, fleeing, that they're getting absolutely spanked. And then you see people like Ramzan Kadyrov, arriving in the theatre of conflict and meeting these apparently dead generals and having pictures taken with them. So you know they're not dead. The Russians.
The leader of the Chechen Republic.
Yeah.
Ramzan
Kadyrov. Now, then you also get this thing of all these massive defections and these massive amounts of Russian troops which are meant to be dying or just running away in shame. And then you actually find that Mariupol has been taken, and the Western press, which were saying you know, all these thousands of Russians are either dying or being encircled and captured, and it's game over. And then they tell you, oh, about a week later, oh, Mariupol's fallen. The entire Ukrainian army there has been encircled, cut off, has run out of food, munitions, hasn't really been fighting effectively for days or even weeks. And they've all just given up, surrendered. And that includes all the foreign fighters who are now being paraded on Russian TV, which we can get back to later because that's quite an interesting thing in itself. So you don't know what's true. And I didn't really know what was true with Moskova. And I don't know what's true with Moskova now. You could say there was a fire on board. It's an old ship. Whatever the truth is, though, whether it was hit by some kind of Ukrainian torpedo or, you know, a Western supplied missile, or whether a little dinghy paddled up to the side of it and stuck something to it, you know, and the people in the dinghy committed suicide, you know, suicide bombed it and it sunk. It doesn't matter. It's very humiliating for the Russians that this has happened. Now, obviously, a 40-year-old vessel, you know, you're talking about something that was commissioned in, you know, 1980 or the, you know, some point in the 1980s. Well, actually, it had been commissioned far earlier. It had been completed in the 1980s, maybe commissioned, you know, in the mid to late 70s. So this is an old vessel. But nevertheless, it's deeply embarrassing for the Russian establishment to have to say that this has sunk. This is something that, you know, these people don't want, you know, they don't want. They don't want to be talking about, because it, you know, it's embarrassing. You don't want that kind of embarrassment. But they have to face this embarrassment because the whole world knows about it. Now, as I said, whether it was sunk or whether it sank, they are two very different things. But at the end of the day, the result is the same. Their flagship, you know, the flagship of their Black Sea fleet is at the bottom of the Black Sea. And that's not good. So that's the first thing. We don't really know what the truth of it is, but whatever the truth of it is an embarrassment for the Russians. Now, the second thing, and this is where I've got a slight difference of opinion to you. Now, you said that this is all about regime change. Now, originally, I believe it was all about regime change, and I agree with you completely. But I think it's morphed away from that now. And I think what we're actually seeing here is the Ukraine being used as a test bed for a lot of new anti-tank, anti-aircraft, anti-armor weapons that the West have been making. And you might be saying, well, why do they need to test these things? Why do you need to test these things? You know, they'll have extensive testing before they're ever actually built, you know, before they're ever built in any large number, they'll have extensive testing, which of course they will. Of course they will. You know, these items cost, you know, millions, sometimes billions of dollars to actually design. So of course they'll have extensive testing before somebody pushes the button and says, you know, hey, we are absolutely going to make thousands of these things. But testing something in a laboratory environment, or testing something against a unmanned vehicle on a range that, you know, not in an active combat situation, is different to testing something in a combat situation in the context of a genuine engagement. And I think what's happening now in the Ukraine is the Western governments are giving the Ukraine more and more support, not just because they want to topple Putin, but because they are actually using this theater of conflict as a way to test their weapons, to test these new anti-tank weapons. And what we're seeing come out of all of this, the big takeaway, is that fundamentally, war is shifting again. Now, war has shifted many times over the last century. You know, we've gone from seeing trench warfare to mechanized blitzkrieg warfare, to warfare that largely involves air support, to warfare that's involved drones, to now finally something slightly different again. And this is a type of warfare that essentially invalidates the use of tanks and armor. Because what you're seeing here in the Ukraine is small groups of ground forces effectively using different kinds of rockets, different kinds of anti-tank weapons to do huge damage to the armor that at one point would have completely overwhelmed a nation like the Ukraine. And this is very, very interesting. And I think the powers that be here in the West are looking at this and they're saying to themselves, you know what? We've got something here where we can actually test all these weapons. Mm-hmm. The Ukraine are going to take these weapons for free. We're not going to have to coerce anyone to use them. The Ukrainian troops are Western trained anyway. So you're not giving them to some, you know, Middle Eastern nation. And they're going to be used against the target. Because often, if you give these weapons to, you know, some South American warlord or some African warlord, these weapons would be used against maybe old Soviet era tanks. But they're being used against modern Russian technology. So I think this is now turning into something completely different. This is turning into a test bed for a new type of warfare. And if, and this is a big if the Moskova was sunk by some handheld rocket-propelled device, you know, fired from a small boat that would be basically undetectable to a large battleship like that, again, that changes the whole, you know, landscape of naval conflict, because you would have these giant multi-billion dollar battleships with all the technology in the world that could be sunk by a dinghy with two guys in it with, you know, a rocket propelled, you know, missile launcher or something like that, that just takes the whole thing out. I think this is very interesting. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who are in the arms industry, in the American military industrial complex, looking at this and thinking, what can they get out of it? And not just what can they get out of it in terms of money, but what they can get out of it in terms of real world battle data.
Well, that's an interesting point. And I can see how that would be very, that this Ukrainian war would be very useful for testing out your new weapons. The point I'm trying to make, I think, is a very important point, and I want to make sure I'm able to make it succinctly. And the main elements are, A, that Russia sees this as an existential threat. The Russian government does. And you'd agree with that, correct?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Okay. This wouldn't have come to an armed conflict if they didn't.
They see it as an existential threat. And then B, that the Ukraine, regardless of the weapons that they're supplied with, is not going to be able to prevail militarily. Is that correct?
I don't think there's any way that the Ukraine can prevail militarily. However, and this is a big however, that largely depends on what Russia wants. Now, at the moment, it appears largely what Russia is looking for is for the Ukraine to back away from hostilities in the Donbass region, and for large areas of the Donbass region to either come under Russian control or become independent, self-governing states. Now, I think that can be achieved. However, if Russia was to attempt to take the whole of the Ukraine intact, I think that could still be achieved. However, there is a large caveat to that too. And that caveat is, when you're looking at what's happening there, if they are to capture that intact, I think that would be very long, very drawn out, and we would see a huge amount of casualties on both sides. Mm. And I think that is what essentially America, the UN, NATO, I think that's what they want. I think the British tabloids want a huge amount of casualties on both sides.
Oh, they
want it to be as messy as possible. But I think to achieve that, on the caveat that they want to capture the Ukraine intact, if they're trying to capture it intact, there will be huge amounts of casualties on both sides. Obviously, if they just want to capture it in the same way as America captured Iraq, that could be done probably within 2 weeks.
Okay.
But there would be nothing left.
All right, well, we're at the break. We're going to continue this on the other side of the break.
Consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Back. Okay, so my basic logic for what I think is an important point is that Russians see that they feel that they are under an existential threat. B, that they will prevail militarily in meeting their goals, at least the goals that they started at the outset, which includes what you mentioned, recognition of the autonomy or independence of these countries and the end of these provinces and the end of hostilities towards ethnic Russians in Ukraine, and also the guarantees that Ukraine will not join NATO or be a launching place for NATO. And C, the only way to prevent this, the only way to prevent Russia from meeting at least those goals is nuclear war. Those are my three things. And then the question becomes, do you really want nuclear war? Do you really want just an extension of people dying? This is what I'm trying to ask Americans or other people who are supporting, saying, well, we got to aid Ukraine. Those are my points. Is that a good line of argument?
I think it's a good line of argument. I mean, I wouldn't think this would come to nuclear war. I think it might be threatened. I think it's always on the table. But would it actually come to it? And I don't believe
it. And if it's not going to come to it, then from the Facebook user's point of view, what's the point of supporting more and more weapons to Ukraine if it's not going to change the ultimate outcome and it's just going to lead to more death and misery?
Other Facebook users, I'm going to stop short of calling them morons, but they are...
You don't have to stop short.
They are basically your Western sheeple. Now, I don't want to be too harsh here, but I'm not going to pull any punches. I did a video on Friday. I do a weekly video or a stream on a Friday. I've been doing that now since 2016. It's 2022. It's a long time. And I made a video this Friday called The Fickle Nature of the Public. And in this video, I reasoned that the same people who not too long ago were attacking Boris Johnson and basically saying that he was a liar, he could never be trusted, that, you know, you couldn't believe a word that came out of his mouth, are all now believing everything he says about the Ukraine. They're believing it, they're buying it hook, line and sinker. They absolutely are hanging on his every word. And most of them seem to have forgotten completely about the situation pertaining to COVID. So it wasn't long ago that he'd lied to everyone. He'd lied to the nation. There was Partygate. He was on the ropes. He was finished. Now, apparently, he's been to the Ukraine. He's paraded around with Zelensky in Kiev. And he's a hero. And everyone's saying, you know, he's the next Churchill. He's wonderful. We need to back Boris. He's the man for the job. The people have got a short memory. So you're asking me, really, how do people on Facebook square the circle here in the Ukraine? And the answer is, they don't have to square the circle. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do anything. These people will believe what they're told. Their beliefs will change on a whim, on an almost daily basis, on different issues. And, you know, you will even have people read an article which is pushing in one direction and agree with that article, and the next day read an article pushing in the completely opposite direction and agree with that article just because it's been phrased in a clever way by somebody in the press. These people are like very, very supple, you know, leaves in the wind. They just go with whatever the flow is, whatever they're told. They don't think about it. They're fed manure. They gobble it down, and then they ask for another plateful. That's the sad truth. They are fickle. They're fickle, and it's disappointing. So if you're going to ask me, do I believe that these Facebookers or these Instagrammers or whoever it is are all going to start, you know, thinking for themselves, putting together a succinct political narrative which is airtight? No, they're not. Unfortunately, they're not. And the thing that's even more unfortunate is they're your voters. They're the people that not long from now will be going to the polls and electing their councillors. And then not long after that, they'll be doing the same and electing MPs again. And, you know, it's just going to be it's the same outcome over and over and over and over again. And unfortunately, they're not thinking people. And democracy is basically at this point, you know, a complete farce, because it's not really democracy, is it? It's not really democracy, because these people vote for you know, two sides, one of two sides of the same coin. And when they're not voting for one of two sides of the same coin, what are they doing? Well, they're having their opinions fed to them by the mainstream media. And the problem is, they're not having their opinions fed to them by a conscientious media that cares about them. They're having their opinions fed to them by an anti-white media that has nothing but contempt for them and always has.
Finish the point.
No, just always has some nefarious agenda behind it. Behind what they're up to.
All right. We'll be right back.
Ground floor perfumery, stationery and leather goods, wigs and haberdashery, kitchenware and food.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer, it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer, Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer. Excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
And yeah, these people, they will support the current thing. And
yeah, the current thing, you know, and that's it, isn't it? They have such short memories. Essentially, these people they'll support the current thing, but they'll forget what they felt about the last current thing. So it's not just about they'll support the current thing. They'll forget whatever was happening during the last and now not current thing. So the same people, as I said, who were complaining bitterly about COVID, and there was a lot of people in the UK who had started complaining bitterly about COVID, and they'd started saying, this guy's a liar. He's full of it. He's absolutely full of it. We don't need this guy. He's terrible. I'll never vote for him again. And now they're acting as if, you know, he's Alexander the Great. You know, he's just sauntered in to Kiev, and now he's Alexander the Great, Napoleon, Churchill. He's all of them rolled into one, the hero of the modern world. But the people who are saying that last week hated him, and they say a week's a long time in politics, and it's been a month since COVID, a good month since all these restrictions were dropped. And people are now acting as if it never happened. Mm. Or the people who were angry about it are acting as if it never happened. The people who loved it and wanted more of it, well, they're begging for you know, the masks to come back. So we're in this weird situation, and I find it all quite frustrating and a little bit wearing.
It is frustrating, and you know, you got people who let's just say people who think the election was a hoax, and they don't like Black Lives Matter, and yet they'll jump on this Ukraine thing. It's like, well, all right, they were lying to you about the election. They were lying to you about Black Lives Matter. Why do you just assume that all of this Russian atrocity porn is real? These would be like hardcore Republicans. But like the problem with the Republicans, and I'm sure you have the same type of thing where you are, And there is a version of this for Democrats too, but the problem with the Republicans is, you know, if they're confronted with Black Lives Matter, it's like, well, yeah, sure, Black Lives Matter, but you know, the blacks are on the Democratic plantation. We're the real party of Martin Luther King. Or if it's about homosexuality, it's like, yeah, you know, I got no problem with gay rights. I just don't want them teaching it in schools or trannies. Is like, oh, I have no problem with trannies. I just don't think they should be in women's sports. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Of course, I see where you're going with it.
And on the flip side, the people we're trying to reach out to
are always playing by the rules of their enemies, and are always trying to meet their enemies halfway. But their enemies aren't trying to meet them halfway. Their enemies are trying to completely crush them and force Sodom and Gomorrah upon them. And they're going, hey guys, but we can meet you halfway. And it's tiring. It's all very, very tiring. You know, because unfortunately, the people we're trying to appeal to, these sort of Republican boomer types, the types that you're talking about, they are always trying to, you know, find some kind of middle ground. They're always trying to find some compromise. I don't want your tranny son to experience any hardship. I will happily call him or her if you say so. I'll check the pronouns, but I just don't want him in my daughter's bathroom. And at that point, the problem is you've accepted the madness. And by accepting the madness and then naively expecting your enemy to say that there will be a caveat to the madness, that's just delusion. Once you've accepted and bought into the madness, there's very little you can do to stop it. You either have to oppose the madness, or you have to be on board with the madness. There's no halfway house. You can't accept the insanity, but then place caveats around it. And the enemy knows that. The left know that. The liberals know that. The people making the policies know that. And because of that, they're laughing when these Republicans or right-wing conservatives buy in to basically this complete and utter cack.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not just the Republicans or the people that we're trying to appeal to that have this tendency. I mean, as somebody who, you know, I was in anti-Vietnam War protests. I go way back in this. And, you know, I've seen the same type of thing on the people who used to be called the left, right? The people who, like, oh, yeah, obviously Saddam Hussein, he needs to be taken out, but it should be with our allies and sanctioned by the United Nations. So they're not objecting to the objectives, the goals. They're just, it's like how we do it. We've got to do this with our allies. We can't go it alone. So you hear the same type of stuff, and you know what the common thread here is? It all seems to be people, whether they're on the so-called left or the so-called right, when they're doing these concessions, saying, well, you know, trying to meet halfway, it's always, and of course things are always going in one way, it's always going the way I notice of the Jewish agenda. And when the Jewish agenda is for war, war in the Middle East, the party that's supposedly the Peace Party, used to be the Peace Party, they're doing the compromising. And when it's for open borders or, you know, transforming or the demography and domestically, which that's also a Jewish agenda, well, then the Republicans, who should have been opposed, they're the ones who are doing the meeting the halfway. I see this Jewish agenda as being dished out, and some elements of it are dished out more to the one side, and some are dished out more to the other side. And basically, I mean, I don't mean to sound conspiratorial, because I don't really think this way, but there's kind of like designated losers. Okay, this side is going to lose these fights. And then you have the appearance of two diametrically opposed political groupings. And the people involved think of themselves as such, but yet the end result just seems to be this Jewish agenda getting pushed forward and forward and forward. That's the way I see it.
Oh, the way I see it is that every time the conservatives, every time we lose ground on some moral issue, we accept that we've lost that ground and we take up our position at a new point. And not only do we forget about the ground we've lost, anybody that suggests we try to recapture that ground is a maniac, a lunatic, is somebody that shouldn't be allowed in the mainstream conservative movement. So that means the conservatives are always being dragged to the left, and the left is never being dragged to the right. So the conservatives say, well, look, we don't want homosexuality to be legalized. And the left say, well, we're going to legalize it, but it's only going to be behind closed doors. And eventually the left win. So homosexuality is legalized behind closed doors. But then the left say, well, actually, we want it to be legalized and out loud and proud. And the conservatives say, whoa. We've allowed you to legalize it, but it was meant to be behind closed doors. So we're going to fight to stop it being loud and proud. But not one conservative says, well, actually, why don't we fight the whole way? Why don't we push it back to being illegal? No one says that, because they say, well, this is the new ground we fight. Then they fight that, and they fight that ground, and they fight, and eventually they lose it. And now being gay has gone from being illegal to being legal and in the closet. And now it is legal and out loud and proud. But then the left say, we want gays to marry. And the conservatives, we're not having this. It was meant to be legal and in the closet. But we agree now that it should be legal and out of the closet. But you never said anything about putting it on the same level as, you know, normal, healthy, childbearing, heterosexual marriage. And obviously the conservatives then lose that. And then the next battleground becomes gay adoption. And every time the conservatives lose ground, they quickly regroup at whatever the current political status quo is and defend that, forgetting everything they ever fought for. So all you have is a slow drag to liberal, multicultural, degenerate insanity. And the conservatives are part of that slow drag, because once they lose ground, they actually shame, destroy, pillory, and lock out of politics anybody who wants to pull things back to any point which has been already lost. So that, by its very nature, means politics only shifts in one direction. It never shifts back in the other direction. So there isn't ever a tug of war between left and right that can be won by the right. It's just a tug of war where the left drags the right further to the left. And in many ways, the quote-unquote right, these conservatives, actually work toward that agenda. And that is all, you know, very, very disappointing. It's very disappointing. And not only is it very disappointing, but it correctly and succinctly illustrates exactly the mess that we're in today. And not, you know, not long from now, things will be far worse because we will be dragged further and further in that direction. And like you see now, leading conservatives will claim that gay adoption and gay marriage is in fact a conservative value.
Right. Well, I mean, you can, all that you spelled out, you're obviously seeing that now. Now, in America, and because I've been involved in this for a long time, I've seen the Democrats as being the party of retreat in certain eras. I mean, right now it's different, but in the 1980s, for instance, the Democrats were not the party of immigration. Neither party was the party of immigration. Both parties had pro and anti-immigration elements to them. And, you know, the Republican Party had, you know, it had the recently acquired Southerners, the Southern whites, who had been in the Democratic Party up until the 60s or 70s, and they'd switched over. They were anti-immigration. But the business, like the pro-business element of it, which was really the dominant element, was pro-immigration and pro-illegal immigration. So you had the Simpson-Mazzoli bill, which was signed by Ronald Reagan and sponsored by Alan Simpson, who was George H.W. Bush's best friend in the Senate. That was actually a Republican-led amnesty over the objections of the labor unions that supported the Democratic Party. So that actually wasn't even a Democratic position yet. But the Democratic positions, they were, at least from the base, not so much from the leadership, but from the base, it was more anti-war. They had been stung by the Vietnam War, which the Democrats opposed more than the Republicans, although it was went in both ways. The Democrats were pro-civil liberties. Excuse me. They were pro-civil liberties. You know, freedom of speech and freedom of this and freedom of that. And they were anti-corporate welfare, anti-corporate domination. And throughout the 1990s, a lot of, well, the war and corporate stuff in the Clinton era, that started going out the wayside as Clinton, he had a policy or a strategy of triangulation, which was, you know, move towards Republican priorities on some issues. He wound up getting the donor base because it used to be that Republicans raised way more money than Democrats, and now it's the complete opposite. You had that, and then I guess with the election of Barack Obama, I guess by the time of the Iraq wars, the only reason that the Democrats were really opposing the Iraq war was because it was George Bush's war. And as soon as these wars became Barack Obama's wars, then they were all cool. But I've seen this happen to the Democrats. Although, you know, at this point, the Democrats aren't at all the same party that they were 40 years ago. So what you see is whichever you're looking at, what you described of what's going on now and what I described of what was going on in the 80s and 90s, the movement is all going towards the Jewish agenda. All the movement seems to be going towards what you could call the Jewish agenda. That's my point.
Well, I think that's a very good point. And I do think there are certain things. Social policy, I think I sort of accurately covered, but I will say there are certain things that seem sort of above that of what we're talking here, and I think these sort of foreign wars are one of those things that are above that. When the establishment truly wants a foreign war, I think it's actually quite difficult to actually prevent that. And I think there are so many pressures upon both sides to bring about these foreign wars that fundamentally they're, when they're going to happen, they are going to happen. And we've seen in the American establishment particularly that once you've sort of got locked into those foreign wars, it seems very difficult for any establishment to end them. And one thing that's always been a little bit of a mystery to me is why Biden ended the war in Afghanistan so abruptly. That to me was one thing that I will absolutely never understand.
Well,
I don't.
Okay,
I'd love somebody to explain that to me, because Biden, in every other way, I think we'd both agree, has been an absolute disaster for the American people. But on that one issue,
he was brilliant. Okay,
yeah, well, that one issue was good.
We'll be right back.
Some clash or twitch the hatter's beard. From now he always shall be single. To fall in love with boys is weird, especially boys without a tingle. Blackadder, his taste is rather odd. Blackadder, I'll rhyme the
corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
We are back. So what are we saying?
What we're saying is everything is rubbish under Biden. But that was quite a thing, wasn't it, when he ended the war in Afghanistan? And we've got to say, that's the kind of thing you'd want to see Trump do.
And everybody complained about it. And of
yes,
course,
he did.
Trump had ordered the end of the war like a couple of times, and his generals were like, nah, we're not going to do that. And finally it ends, and then everybody jumps on Biden, and Trump jumps on Biden. It's like, And the people who had been calling for the war to end, they were jumping on Biden saying, yeah, we want it to end, but not like that. It reminds me of a joke my dad used to tell. It was a Shaggy Dog joke about—it was really long, because that's what Shaggy Dog jokes are supposed to be. But about somebody in America seeing an advertisement or a notice saying, it was some rich English nobleman had lost his shaggy dog, and this guy finds a shaggy dog, and he sells everything he has, and he goes across the Atlantic, because it was, you know, he couldn't fly, he had to take a boat, because that's how it was back then. Takes this boat to this English manor and knocks on the door, and the guy answers, and he says, "I got your shaggy dog." He says, "Oh, that's not my shaggy dog." He says, what do you mean it's not your shaggy dog? Look how shaggy it is. My dog wasn't that shaggy. And like, it's I don't know, I'm not telling it well, but everybody, all these people wanted the war to end, and then it ends, and they say, "Oh, but we didn't want it to end like that. They left behind like a quarter million Afghani translators. We didn't bring our translators with us. They left the weapons, and the Taliban has the weapons that we could have used to invade another country or attack our own people."
Yeah, that was one of the most irritating things. And personally, people are probably not going to like me for saying this, but during that withdrawal from Afghanistan, it obviously seemed quite chaotic. And the chaos was obviously helped somewhat by the fact that the Taliban were so blatantly not beaten that before all American boots were safely on planes and flying home, the Taliban had already managed to retake large parts of the country. And this accelerated dramatically the more America, you know, appeared to be completely committed to leaving. But there was one thing that kept being in the news, and it was about this, I think he's an American, he might be British actually, I don't know, but he got the most irritating name ever. He was called Penn Farthing. And the Daily Mail and other tabloids here in the UK kept running these stories about Penn Farthing and his animals, because this guy had apparently stayed in Afghanistan to look after these animals that had in some way been victims of the war. So these animals had been victims of the war, and this guy who had this irritating name, Penn Farthing, had stayed to look after, I think most of them were dogs. And it was almost like on a daily basis in the UK, there had to be a story at the top of the news feed about what's going to happen to the dogs this fella has rescued. And oh my, it was just absolutely nauseating. And not only was it nauseating, but for years, the Daily Mail and the people reading the Daily Mail had said, "Let's get out of Afghanistan." And now, because a few dogs are going to be left there, they're all like, "Well, we wanted it, but not in this way." Oh, God.
What do they expect the Taliban to do to the dogs? Anyway, all right. Well, thank you for joining me, Mark.
It's been brilliant, as always. Thank you so much. And as I said, I will look forward to seeing you again, and I hope everyone has a wonderful Easter break.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National People Radio.
You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You always tell me.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at TLBTalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.